we go. From one exhibition to another, with Lauren Logan, who's here in the audience, we curated the Modern Scottish Women show, which opened at the start of November. And people have questioned the validity in a women-only exhibition, which I think we've been able to roundly rebuttal. We wanted to do an exhibition focusing on women artists to look at the impact of their gender on their experiences training and practicing as artists that male artists simply wouldn't have experienced, to combine that impact of gender with art historical concerns so that we could look afresh at an otherwise sort of familiar academic period. And for a variety of reasons, often early deaths, short careers, few accessible works, a lot of these artists, there aren't enough works by them with which to mount a solo exhibition, which is how a lot of public galleries are programmed. So the template of a group exhibition allows us to get out their work and show it to the public. It allows us to show the work of little-known artists, people like Margaret Campbell McPherson, Ottilie McLaren-Warris, but also to shed new light on artists who are perhaps better known, like Joan Eardley and Wilhelmina Barnes Graham. We concentrated on painters and sculptors because women have been more readily researched and exhibited in terms of their achievements in the applied arts, most notably in the Glasgow Girls exhibition here in the Glasgow School of Art in 1990, but also Liz Arthur's Glasgow Girls shows in Kirkcudbright in 2010 and 2014. So we wanted to look at the painting and sculpture side and look at sort of Scotland-wide, although actually the 45 painters and sculptors in the show trained in Edinburgh, Glasgow and Paris, but not at Duncan of Jordanston and Gray's up in Aberdeen. That just seems to be how things worked out. And why the period? Well, in 1885, Sir William Fettes Douglas, who was president of the Royal Scottish Academy, declared that the work of a woman artist, was like a man's, only weaker and poorer. But in the same year, Fra Newbery was appointed headmaster at Glasgow School of Art and did a huge amount in terms of gender equality amongst staff and students. And we see him here with Margaret MacDonald McIntosh. And then we took it up to 1965, which is when Anne Redpath died, who's widely recognised as the sort of doyen of post-Second World War painting. And what we realised is that during those 80 years, an unprecedented number of Scottish women trained and practised as artists, and we wondered why, what made that possible, and what were their experiences. So I wanted to look at the issues of selecting, researching, and interpreting the work of women artists for public consumption. And in terms of selecting, we looked at over 200 artists who had to narrow it down to what would make a sort of compelling yet somehow comprehensive story. Given the room available, it's the four rooms on the top floor of the Scottish National Gallery of Modern Art 2. So every work in the show had to earn its place, because what we didn't want was for people to say, oh, well, the reason that we haven't heard of her is because she's not very good. So it happens to be a work, an exhibition where all the artists are women, but we would argue that each work is brilliant in its own right. So we've borrowed from 21 public collections, and we're also showing works from our own holdings, two loans from the trade and 14 loans from private collections. And we're very lucky that the majority of lenders that we approach were willing to lend to us. This one is the one that I would take away, Agnes Miller Parker, who's better and deservedly known for her wood engravings, but actually painted about a dozen of these fantastic sort of vortices, cubist-inspired paintings in London between 1928 and 1930, which we just didn't know about because there are so few of them. She only exhibited, we think, four of them once. They didn't sell. And in a little way, we feel this has sort of rewritten our history, because William McCants, William Johnston and J.D. Ferguson are the Scottish artists who were always talked about as being avant-garde in London between the wars. And these paintings show that she was too, and arguably in a more intelligent and ambitious way than the others. So we were absolutely delighted to find that in a private collection. The ones that got away, there's a fantastic portrait of E.A. Hornell by Bessie McNichol, which hangs at Broughton House in Kirkcudbright. And sadly, the National Trust for Scotland had already agreed to lend it to another exhibition before I was organised enough to ask. And even more heartbreakingly, our very own Romance, which is a sort of searing, extraordinary self-portrait by Cecil Walton of her shortly after she's given birth to her second son, which we had agreed to lend to another gallery. And of course, it would have been totally inappropriate, though I tried to renege on that loan. So researching, here is Lauren Ann Philida, because some of these artists are very well documented, people like Phoebe Anna Traquair, thanks to Elizabeth Cumming and other researchers, but others, there was very, very scant evidence. They're just listed in RSA exhibitor listings or mentioned as a list of names in a review. And then you come across a couple of crocks of gold under the rainbow with Philida's archival material about Gertrude Alice Meredith Williams, which allowed us to do hopefully something worthwhile in the catalogue. Excellent Christmas present. Very few of them published about being an artist and a woman. And one of the few who did was Cecil Walton, who very poignantly described the tragedy that attends so often the attempt to reconcile career and domestic life. So we put together, with the help of 21 contributors, sort of 700 word artist entries on all 45 of the women. So we're really pleased that that has been published and will live on after the exhibition has closed. And then in terms of interpreting the exhibition, one of the fundamental issues, as I referred to earlier, was the artists' names, because of using maiden names or married names or second married names or reverting to maiden names when relationships had failed, and connecting those different names with the same person and all the works that they showed. And so Mabel Pride, who's James Pride's sister, is known as that north of the border where she grew up, but she's known as Mabel Nicholson in England, which was her married name and the name which she used professionally. But she's so strongly known under both names, we've labelled her Mabel Pride Nicholson in this exhibition. We decided, after much discussion, to take a neutral but factual approach rather than an overtly feminist approach. So when things like the legislation known as the marriage bar was discussed, this prevented married women from teaching full time. And it was repealed in Scotland in 1945, but it did affect the careers of several of the artists' features, none less than Dorothy Johnston, who, on marrying her Edinburgh College of Art colleague D.M. Sutherland in 1924, had to resign her post. And it's widely recognised that, although she continued to work and she was elected an associate member of the Royal Scottish Academy, really the peak of her career was whilst she was teaching at Edinburgh College of Art. Very careful choice of language. So one of the phrases I took from Jude Burkhouse's Glasgow Girls catalogue was conditions negotiated rather than discrimination. And we did look at the impact of the artists' private lives in a way that we ordinarily wouldn't have. Again, it was that idea of the impact of being female. So I, for example, wrote the artist entry on Anne Redpath. I've done a bit of work on her in the past. It's the first time I've described her as having had a career break, which she effectively did for 20 years while she brought up her three sons. And then when her youngest son had reached a certain age, she was able to take back up her paintbrushes with aplomb and great success. And also to take essentially a glass half full approach. So the Glasgow Arts Club was formed in Glasgow in 1867. The Scottish Arts Club was set up in Edinburgh in 1872. They didn't permit women until 1983 and 1982. But women did it for themselves. So we've referred to the Glasgow Lady Artists Society, founded in 1882, and also the Scottish Society of Women Artists, founded in Edinburgh in 1924. So there's always a flip coin of women doing it for themselves if they're excluded from something. So throughout this project, we realised that actually some of the artists who were once visible, very successful during their lifetimes, are now invisible and little known about, little displayed, little researched, and we wondered why. And there were just four that I wanted to mention. Oh, sorry, that was I've never had to do that before. Put up in an exhibition a note about the artist's names, explaining how we had come to agree on what the artists were going to be called. There's one, Stansmore Dean Stevenson, whose the ambiguity of her Christian name, Stansmore, meant that she was quite often praised for her masculine technique. So this is Mary Cameron, and really Janice Helland has pioneered the research into her work. Born in Portobello in 1865, died in Edinburgh in 1921, trained in Edinburgh and Paris, and at the Royal Dick Veterinary College in Edinburgh. This is a fantastic exhibition work. It's probably about the size of the slide in real life. But she was best known for her very frank depictions of Spanish bullfights that lent her the name Bloody Mary. And in contemporary reviews, the majority male critics were always at pains to say, oh, despite her subject matter, Mary is charming and beautiful. But what's rather nice is she's not having any of it. She says, look at my paint spatters hands, look at my filthy tunic. Painting is hard physical work. And she won medals in the Paris Salon. She's exhibiting in the Royal Scottish Academy for decades, and yet we know very little about her now. And I think that's because there are so few works in public collections, very little archival material, and her subject matter's gone out of fashion. However, following the exhibition opening, one of her descendants has been in touch with me, so we're hoping that that's going to open up a whole new avenue of research. Kathleen Scott Kennett, who I mentioned earlier, better known as Captain Scott of Antarctic's widow, and here she is with her son. I bet my sons would not sit gazing up at me while I was trying to work in quite that manner. But she has four surnames, so we went with the two that she's best known by. She was incredibly successful between the wars, based in London, really very well known as a society lady because of the Captain Scott legacy, but also she married a politician. And she, interestingly enough, was anti-women suffrage, not least because she did portrait busts of four prime ministers in a row and had a very different way of making her political views known. So her work was much admired and highly sought after during her lifetime, but fell out of favour. There are lots of works in public collections. We also know lots about her because her diaries were posthumously published, which is why we know that she vomited on sight of her first male nude model in a life class. And yet, she's still not really discussed and displayed. And I think it's because of that fall of fashion, these cyclicals, the fashionable taste. So her work is contemporary with, or slightly later than this work, with people like Barbara Hepworth, but is far removed from that modernist aesthetic. And people aren't interested in it just now. So this is Bessie McNichol. Ailsa Tanner has really pioneered the research into her work. She died in childbirth at 34, so that isn't going to happen to a man. And she had a career of just over 10 years, so not very long, but in that time had solo exhibition in Glasgow, when that's a very unusual thing to happen, exhibited internationally. Her death was marked in the press. But her husband married not long after she had died. He then died by suicide, and his second wife sold off all his and McNichol's work at McTeers here in Glasgow before it had been really listed, acknowledged, attributed. So there will be plenty of works by Bessie McNichol out there, but we just don't know, and maybe even the owners don't know. And then Flora MacDonald Reed, who was one of the most enigmatic artists in the show, this absolutely beautiful painting lent to us from Fleming's from 1883, Field Workers, which would absolutely hold its own in a Glasgow Boys exhibition. And again, she's someone who a lot of works bought for public collections during her lifetime, but we're not even sure where she died. Now, this can be said for plenty of male artists as well, and so I think that covers a broader art historical and curatorial issue of these artists who were once incredibly visible, and yet now we just know nothing about. Their works are in museum stores. There's no archival material to back it up. All our research leads came to nothing. So we may never, simply never know anymore. And also, after this beautiful phase, her work sort of, I think, slid down into sort of sentimental narratives of sort of baby's wish and grandfather's bedtime stories. And again, that question of fashion, nobody's going to be interested at the moment in researching that those kind of lines. So just to talk about the show opening. What is very nice is that the National Galleries of Scotland immediately gave their blessing to do a women-only show. And it wasn't really a case of making it up as we went along, but more finding out as we went. Every day we were finding out more and hoping that we would be able to put it into the catalogue and the exhibition labels. And what has been great is the positive response to it. And Nicola Sturgeon actually came to open the show, which was fantastic, because as Scotland's first female First Minister, that was a great blessing to the achievements of Scottish women artists. And the visitors' comments book has been very positive. Some people have been cross that we've referred to the artists' husbands, but we've only done that where it had an impact on the artists' careers. So several of them, their husbands were ill for a very long time, and therefore you see great blanks in their exhibiting history. But then once the poor husband has died, they have these late flourishing of careers. So we just mentioned it where it did impact on their careers, which it very definitely did for some of them. And the interest from the public has been fantastic. So I gave an opening lecture that was fully booked before the show even opened. So I had a cup of tea and gave it again that afternoon. And as I say, we have now starting to get emails from descendants of the artists, people who have got work by these artists, people who are studying these artists. So we really hope that it will inspire further display, research and debate. Thank you. Oh, and study day coming up.